Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to South African singer and songwriter Louise Carver. She began playing the piano at 2 and received her first recording contract at the age of 15. Over the years, she has released 7 solo albums and has had number one singles throughout Europe, the Billboard Dance Charts, and in South Africa. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Louise Carver. What's happening in your world and how are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. It's lovely. Well, a lot is happening. I've just released my 7th studio album called Wow. Dark Secrets, and it has been so well received. I was a little nervous because it is quite a sensual album because we are sensual beings and we've been locked up for too long. And so there's no real heartbreak. It's just it's saying some interesting things and done in a very sophisticated pop way. So I'm marketing the album at the moment. And then my online jewelry business, Louise Carver Collection, is growing beautifully. So I'm very busy with that. And managing my life, basically, trying to keep everything together.
What's the online collection again?
It's Louise Carver Collection. I've had the business for 14 years.
Okay.
And I went online during COVID and it just went from strength to strength. So it is full on, but I balance between the music and the jewelry.
Lovely. Mm. Now, let's take it all the way back. Rewind.
Okay.
Let's go.
Little me.
So let's start at the very beginning.
Yes.
Louise Carver. Let's tell the world the Louise Carver hybrid music story journey.
In a nutshell?
Well, not.
What kind of nut?
About a 4-minute nut.
Okay, right. So we're going maybe, I don't know, an almond. All right, let's go. It's quite big. So Wikipedia has it wrong. I started playing the piano not at 11. I started playing the piano at 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
It was something that I was always drawn to. I can't remember why, but there's video footage, so I know that it was me. my folks also were quite amazed at how I was singing along at about 2 as well to Freddie Mercury because of all the vinyl Queen records that they used to play nonstop. So they knew there was something a bit odd about me through school, topped the choirs, all the rest, that stuff, and opera training from 15 with quite a legend in the industry, Wendy Fine, and I was born in Cape Town. First generation South African, my parents immigrated from England. And at 15 at the same time, I'd been writing music from 11 on the piano, just me writing my little heart. I don't know what I was writing about, but I got signed to my first record label at 15. Strange story. My best friend at the time, a guy called Wayne, was good friends with his next door neighbor, and the next door neighbor's father had a record label. So we trotted over when I was 15 to just put a little band together. Me and my very driven, even then, A-type way, photocopied all the music we were going to learn. They were hungover. It wasn't really a good fit. They just wanted to get together and make a noise. I was ready and organized.
You sound like me. That's why I'm giggling. We should say that's
nothing
me.
Has changed. Everyone had pens. We were ready to go. The girlfriend of the record label boss walked past and heard me singing without a mic because I was opera trained, so I hadn't used a mic before. And she went and pulled said person off the couch who was watching the rugby, which was a big thing for him to move because he was rugby passionate. It was All Blacks. And Springboks. And he peeled himself off the couch to come and listen to me, and he never left. And so he developed my voice mic technique. We used to go to disgusting little dives along the N2 for me to practice stage work. And 17, I released Don't Worry About It. And I was still in school, and it went to number one, and it changed my life for better and for worse. There was a lot of things to get used to. I lost all my friends that year. They just thought that I was going to get a big head. Meanwhile, I was overwhelmed and sinking, actually, in because I think a lot of entertainers are. We are hybrids, so we are very introverted people, mm-hmm. but then we have to learn to cope with the attention that we get, and,
yes.
and so we develop another personality to cope, but we're still introverts at heart that need to recharge on our own. I don't know any songwriter or artist that isn't that way. Mm. We can't recharge with other people's energy. It has to be our own. So, yeah, so that happened. And then it was a wonderful spike of interest in me. And then we released my first album, Mirrors and Windows. I toured. I went to university, UCT. I did 4 years. I did my honors in politics, philosophy, economics. And my record label handled that development very well. They backed off when it was time to write exams. And then they put the pressure on when we were just being university drinking students. And then my degree ended and I left for London. And I had a number one with the song Kenny Hawkes and myself, Play the Game, which was number one. I'm still earning royalties off it now. It went number one in Europe. And it was a very strange story. This is why I always say to entertainers, you must pay your dues and work other jobs to get life experience. I worked as a maitre d' in Blues Restaurant in Camps Bay from 18 till about 21. And from that experience, I wrote the song Play the Game, which is a legendary Deep House song, I must say. It is still a big song. Then from there, the success of that led me to Sony UK, which I did a song called I'd Say Yes, which went to number one in Europe again, in Belgium, topped the charts, literally number one on their national charts, not a dance chart, and then in Russia as well. And then that song brought me back to South Africa because it was doing so well in South Africa, also went to number one here. And I was working for 3 years in England on Silent Scream, which was my second studio album, and which Empty Fantasy, so sail away, mandolin, that was off there. And the deal fell through with Universal International, and Sony SA signed me straight away. So I came back to South Africa and then started my South African journey.
Wow. So many things. So let's unpack the Louise Carver creative process. Mm. From zero to a 3 to 4 minute song. Mm. What invigorates, what motivates, what inspires you? Is it easy each time? Is the process the same each time? Let's dive into that.
It's sometimes extremely easy, and I'm shocked by the way I just get out of my own way. It just comes through me, and I know that that is a very special time for any, whether you're a painter or an actor, that moment, and it's you don't take that for granted. You actually really need to be in that moment because you'll write a whole song in about half an hour. That hasn't happened that much for me, and that means lyrics and music come out, boom, done. Within an hour, I've had songs like Empty Fantasy. Within an hour, it's done. And Home. So the big ones just go straight through. And then sometimes it's agonizing. It's like, you know, you've got a good chorus, but you just can't get the verse and the bridge, and it's just not working. So you can spend a long time on it, years sometimes, and come back to it and whittle away. It doesn't make it on that album, comes on another album. It's always started from emotion and needing to get on the piano and just to get it out. And the lyrics and the music come at the same time. But this latest album, Dark Secrets, because of the 2 year kind of incubation of staying indoors, and I'm in a very good place romantically as well. There's a lot of, I'm in a very peaceful space as opposed to the torment of, I never really got the hang of relationships. I was very focused on my career. And so I'd never really learned how to handle relationships, and I'd pick the wrong people that are completely incompatible with me and have these long heartbreaks. So it was very lovely for songwriting. Empty Fantasy, yeah. What are the other ones? A lot of the songs were just absolutely incompatible with someone, but loving them, and it's not enough. I've written that lots of times. Sometimes love's not enough. He will leave regardless. And it's true. It's not enough. But right now I'm in a very wonderful, nurturing, kind relationship. Touch wood, no drama. And so I couldn't write during the COVID time from that space. It was a very interesting time because I thought, well, I'm not drawing off like he left me or, you know, he's screwing around or whatever and my heart's breaking. Yeah. I have nothing to draw from except fantasy. So this album is different how I wrote it. And it's a lot lighter.
Do you always write yourself or do you ever collaborate with other writers?
Mainly myself. The whole thing comes together. I'm a little package. But now and again, I'll ask somebody to give me, I just feel like the album's missing a more up-tempo. I don't want to base it, the melody in a piano. I want to base it off a groove. So because I've got quite a big dance history, DJs or producers will send me a groove, no melody, just a really kind of like percussive groove. And then from there, the song will come. So, for example, I asked Simpiwe Mkula from The Muffins, because we're friends, can you give me like a really sexy, like Maputo kind of club beat?
Yeah.
And he did that for me during lockdown, and I wrote the song Take My Hand, which is all fantasy about getting ready to go out with your friends, even though we were in our pajamas. So I wrote projecting into the future, yes, which I've never done before. So, yeah, so this album, I would say I always write from the past, but then this album went, no, you don't. Yeah, when you can actually change it up and have fantasy as well drive you, hope.
Writing a song, a slow sort of melody, slow song compared to a fast-paced groove dance song.
Mm.
The difference, do you prefer either or which comes more naturally to you?
It's a funny one because, again, it comes from the groove so and my headspace. So with Take My Hand with Sims, yeah, it happens very quickly. I think it's easier for me to write with the dance track because with Kenny Hawkes and Play the Game, which I spoke earlier about, is actually quite an amazing story. So flew to London with nothing, no money. My sister had a small little apartment in Wandsworth, I think, near Wimbledon, as all the Saffers do. And she gave me a cupboard to stay in. Okay, it was a small room. But London, it's a cupboard. Or New York, it's London, it's a room. In South Africa, it's a cupboard.
It's less than a cupboard.
Less than a cupboard.
Yes, and I lived in London. I lived London in London as well, so I know exactly what you're speaking about. Yes.
You know it. Okay, so I stayed there for 3 months, pounding the pavement. Literally, I had the Starbucks. It's a great diet. I must recommend it if you're wanting to lose some pounds. Take a small amount of money to a very expensive city, and you can only afford coffee, and also walk that town bare, flat. You will lose weight, promise. So that
lose
really is effective.
Lose pounds and not spend pounds.
Brilliant. That's the diet of choice for a young 20-something trying to make it. So, so that's what I did. And before I left for London, a photographer wanted to take some photos of me. And he took these fantastic shots and he said, you need to speak to my friend Kenny. He's in Camden in London and he's an amazing deep house. I mean, he's a legendary deep house. He's passed on, but legendary deep house DJ. And I said, please, won't you just call him before? I don't like to cold call. And I had all these little numbers scribbled out. I still got that pad as a memory for me. This little pink sparkly pad I took to London when I was 20. And please call him. Please call your friend. Tell him I'm coming. Well, I phoned Kenny. Yeah. And I said, hi, Kenny, it's Louise from South Africa. Your friend Kevin called to say, what? Kevin who? Oh, come over then. So I got on a tube to Camden. Found his little address, and there was this guy, I kid you not, looked like the BFG from Roald Dahl's Stories. Huge, bald, towering over me. And he said, come up. Now, you know, with Camden, those places are very long and thin, so it's carpeted stairs. You go up to the third floor. And I thought, well, I think either I'm going to die. I mean, I don't know this guy. I'm just going up this like long carpeted stairway, I remember. And then I got to the top and he said, right, what do you do? So I said, I played him my first album, Little Bits, which was very Alanis Morissette and kind of style, which is the 90s. And he said, okay, well, I've just brought over this African-American singer. I paid for her flight, her accommodation, and she's coming into one of the biggest London studios tomorrow. I've got the day in the studio. It's costing me a fortune. I will send a black taxi for you to come in, not the South African black taxi, to be clear, a London cab.
Yeah.
Can you imagine London? Whoa, that's a funny image. And I could only take, obviously, no one. I mean, a black taxi then would kill me financially. So I was like, okay, to my sister's address and we'll pick you up. Be ready and just bring something. And I had, here's the beat. Now, Deep House is very kind it's a very clear and simple beat. There's no melody. Go. So I got on the tube. I had my little Walkman or headphones, whatever I was listening to then. And it was, you walked into a nightclub. I smiled and did my job. So I wrote Play the Game in the tube, writing it. Then you took me serious and handed me a card, I said. So anyway, I wrote the song on the tube. And then the next morning he picked me up with his cabbie. And he took me through to this beautiful London studio. Like, and I was only been there for 3 days in London. Now, the singer he had brought over, who was very much in that early 2000s dance, like, how you doing, everybody?
Yeah.
Are you having fun? You know, that kind of singer. Yeah. And the people were going, woo!
Yes.
That was that dance.
Yes, yes, yes.
She had got to the studio, forgotten her lyrics, and had to go back to the hotel. Now, Kenny was furious because that's cab money. It's expensive. He's got time in the studio.
Yeah.
He said, Louise, go. And it was literally, it's like the heavens opened. I growled. Because in that song, Play the Game, it's like, row. You got to be real. And I am actually quite a shy person.
Yes.
And I, because no one was around me, my parents are in South Africa, no one that knows me is around. And in that record, Play the Game, I'm growling like this animal.
Yeah.
And it was so freeing to just be this crazy sexual being. And I left, shook his hand, off I went, and I thought, well, nothing of it. About 3 months later, back in Cape Town, I get a call to say it's signed to Virgin Records. And Kenny said it's been being played in the clubs and it's going massive. He never even played the girl that he flew over's track.
Yeah.
It's just how the stars align.
Yes.
You know? So that was one of those situations, back to your early question. And that's life. You know, you can't plan for that stuff. She forgot her lyrics. I come in and I'm ready.
Yes.
And something took over me and I'd, you know, the spirit of dance, baby.
Yeah.
Spirit of early 2000 dance came over me and I gave it horns and it paid off. And that was magic. And so that was very easy to write that. Sims playing that groove, very easy. I'm working with another Serbian guy at the moment. It's very hard industrial house. I find that quite tricky to write over. So it just depends. If I hear a groove and it works for me, I'm in. Go away. I'm writing.
Yeah.
I can feel it straight away. Working on the piano, I hate most of the things that I write for about 3 days. And then suddenly I think, that is cheesy. I'm done. I've been there. We've done that already, Carver. So it's actually a lot easier to write with a groove. Because I'm not in that groove comes to me, and then
yes.
I can just, I'm not tied to the piano.
Yes.
But what a good piano song, nothing can beat that.
And you always write the lyrics yourself. You don't collaborate.
Always. No, okay. I've never had anyone write lyrics okay. with me. But yeah.
And if someone would want to, would you find that an easy process? Or would you like, no, this is my little place that I like to be in? Or...
I would need to really trust that person.
Okay.
And there'd need to be a point, because that is kind of my forte. So it's so it's like I bring in a lot of people, producers and, you know, guitarists, whoever I need, like, because I'm not, that's not my forte.
Yes.
So like this is really the little okay. gift that my brain gave me through great, hopefully, genetics or whatever you, I don't know, a little bit of spiritual dust as well thrown in for good measure. But yeah, it would be really, I'd need to really look up to that person and trust okay. that person. Otherwise, I just think, no, I got this.
And have you ever written for any other artists?
Nothing leaps to mind, actually. I think I'm so diary entry. Dear diary, I feel sad. No, I don't. I mean, I write for a lot of DJs, obviously, yes. but not for another singer as
yes.
yet.
Okay.
Up until this point.
Okay. And would you be open to
yeah,
that?
Yeah, definitely. That I would be very open
okay.
to.
Okay.
And open to them changing it as well. Obviously, if I was a hired gun, then that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you first started releasing music, it was CDs, pre that, cassettes, vinyls. Those are making a comeback, thank goodness.
Yes.
Because I love me the CD. I love holding something.
Do
aesthetic.
You?
Okay. I love the ownership of it. And for me, buying a CD is like a thank you, because you guys put in a lot of hard work,
oh, my goodness.
The energy, all that stuff. And it's like, yeah, thank you. I'm now holding it. And now it's these streaming platforms. Oh. What is your perception of the way people consume music now compared to when you first started?
It's horrible, to be honest with you. It's killed our industry. It was all right at the point where people were downloading for R9.99 a single that they like. So they're dissecting the album, which isn't really the point of why we do an album. It's
yes.
a story. And it's a yep. journey. And I remember, I mean, the first tape that I bought, I wasn't making music then, but the first tape I bought was Tracy Chapman,
yes.
self-titled album. And every song, I can give you the nuances of every, from song number one to the whole album.
Mm.
I know every single nuance of that. And I listened to it until the tape stretched.
Yeah.
And the same with the CD, Cranberries or what have you, that I grew up with in the 90s as a teenager. So it was a story, and the artist has carefully put together the playlisting of that. I
mean, yes.
It's agonizing. I sit for months actually going that, oh, that doesn't work next to that song, or that doesn't make
yeah.
sense, or this, you know. So that's horrible, but it's okay. At least music is getting out to people that maybe wouldn't have heard you before. So there's, you know, that balanced, the cons and the pros and the cons balanced. But with streaming, it's a disaster. because you are paying next to nothing to listen to something that is very, very valuable and costs a lot of money. Never mind the whole, you know, creative process being valuable, but the actual raw costs are extreme for us. And the marketing and all of that goes into it. And then the payout for artists, particularly if you're not a Taylor Swift or an Ed Sheeran or, you know, the, some of the bigger worldwide artists, it's a tiered process. So the streaming comes in to, say, Spotify, the money comes in. And even those artists are not doing great with that income. But they pay the big international artists first. They're not counting how many streams. They're just kind of, those guys get the lump sum of the streaming money. And then it filters down. So we get nothing. It's basically just making a business card for someone to come and see your live show. It's horrible.
It's like it is. I mean, when you say that, and you know, the time and energy to create one song, and I see people who are on their phones, oh, I don't really like the song, let's skip it, oh, next song. And it's taking, I feel that it's definitely cheapened the experience and the music industry.
Yes, and it's become disposable, and the expectations of people has been that music must be free. Now imagine any other industry in the world, bring it down to just plumbing services. Like, you know, the plumber must just do the just come and fix the pipes for free or unblock the drain. Like, no other industry in the world has an expectation, apart from the entertainment, and I've put in movies and everything else under that same bracket, under the same umbrella, as the public has now seen that as like, well, I'm not paying for that. It must be free. But someone's paying, and it's the artist. And the problem with that, and it's just like, not to bring in Eskom, is like, we knew about 14 years ago this day was coming, load shedding six and beyond. And it's the same with this, like, you know, someone's paying for it, and it's the musicians. The record label is making less money, but they're still not paying for it. We are paying for everything. And what's going to happen is less and less musicians can make a living out of it. And most of us, and I've always been a full-time musician until COVID. So most of us now, I don't know many musicians that haven't got to take on another
side hustle
to keep going, because you just can't make enough money. And on top of that, when you tour, petrol price has gone through the roof, you know, accommodation, everything like that. Thank goodness there's Airbnb. But just, and people now, because of COVID, are still hesitant to come out. Not so much because they're scared of COVID, but more that they've kind of got used to a more lazy life.
I also can't get it.
Sleepy life. Yeah. There's more lazy. So they're now kind of getting into the Netflix, pour themselves a glass of wine.
Yeah.
But when you go out, I was recently at Josh Lindberg's latest theatre opening of Cruise in Victoria. Were you there as well?
On Wednesday. I was there.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, we didn't know each other then, but now we do. Hello. Friend in the future.
Yes. That's so funny.
We probably walked past it.
Exactly.
So I loved that, by the way.
It was brilliant.
What a night. I was on a high for...
Such a brilliant show.
Yeah, for yesterday I was on a high going like... And that's what live entertainment is about. You can't get that from... Netflix is wonderful. And Showmax, what have you. I mean, White Lotus, hello. Brilliant. But still, there's something about watching a performer in their element, doing their thing, and seeing their sweat. It's just...
And the excitement. So, you know, that excitement of waiting for the next episode. So my one colleague, she complains, oh, you know, White Lotus, she has to wait a week for the next episode. And I'm like, that's how it always was.
It was
that anticipation. Like, why do I have to wait? Well, like, why not? Like, let that anticipation build and enjoy it.
Yes. And it is. It's that instant gratification and binging and flipping through someone's album, and I'm guilty of it too. I binge crappy shows. My unorthodox life, it's so bad, but I binged it last Friday. So I'm not like a saint, but a White Lotus, you do not binge. The writer, what's it now? Something White. He is magnificent. Michael White, I think. I've probably got that wrong, but definitely his surname's White. Magnificent writer. Yeah. So I think we are going into a place where musicians can't afford to become experts at their craft. And that is a problem, because you grow exponentially when you are being a musician full time. And when you're having to dabble like I know all of us are, I won't mention, we're all dabbling. Sims, Jay something, myself, we all have another job to pay our bills. And that's not good. And I'm very aware of that. You should be focused in on your craft to be the best.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you know, last year, CDs sales went up for the first time in 21 years.
I did not know that.
And the vinyls, cassettes and CDs are increasing year on year.
Well, that is a nugget.
And it's not the older people. It's actually the younger, the teenagers and the 20-something-year-olds who are buying into it.
Wow.
So that's something to put that energy there to keep it out. Because this whole thing, this non-energy exchange for something so important and so relevant has to reach a point where it's no point to it anymore. Because if there's no energy exchange, then there will be no more music. There'll be no more entertainment.
Yeah, then, just bad music.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, just like, which you can buy anyway when you buy an app or whatever and you get this free library music.
Exactly.
Because, or just the teeny pop kind of Justin Bieber stuff, because they will keep that going.
Well, I like that as well.
Nothing wrong. Those songs are catchy, and there's something to be said about it. Pop is supposed to be catchy, and there's a real craft in that.
Yes.
Not everything has to be, you know, a piece of like a hand woven jersey. You know? Sometimes it can be just a cheap T-shirt, but it's
or a vest. Nice. Yeah, exactly.
Weird clothing analogy, but I think there's a real an amazing skill to writing a catchy song, and not to take away from that. That is a massive skill.
Putting you on the spot.
Do it.
Your answer will be different if I ask you this in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 hours tomorrow.
Okay.
Your top five go-to songs by other artists in this moment.
Ooh, sure. I'm not good at remembering names of books or movies or songs, but I'd have to just give the artists on the playlist.
Perfect.
Okay, so it does depend on the mood. There would need to be... Okay, I'm just in the moment, just flipping what I know.
Yes.
Fleetwood Mac, because it's been on my mind because
the passing,
And Tracy Chapman for a good old reflective nostalgic cry. Black Coffee, because he is just a genius. I want to include some Johnny Clegg.
Yes.
And let's have something. I want to have somebody new that I'm listening to. Who am I listening to? Okay. Let's just put a... Crowded House. I don't know. It's just whatever it flips around.
No, but that's not the thing. That's why I love this game.
Yeah, it's horrible.
I know. The recipients hate it, but I love it because it's so interesting what comes out. And it's just like, you think, okay, top, easy. But when you actually put on that spot, it's hard.
If I look at my playlist, it goes from classical music, which I really, really enjoy to give my brain a break from lyrics and singing, the actual vocal. So I do put on classical music in the car, and I find that that's very calming. And then it'll go to the nostalgic section, which my brain now, when you've asked me to put in the spot, I'm not listening to a lot of Crowded House or Tracy Chapman at the moment, but I can't remember the new ones because I've got a very short, if there's new information, it takes me a long time, like learning a song. Or if there's a change musically, like Sims will say to me, so Sims and I do a really nice duo show together. I'm holding a guitar. I don't know why I'm holding a guitar. I play the piano. I should do air piano. But I was like, Sims, and my arm goes out. So Sims will say, Lou, let's just like take it to the A minor instead of going to resolve it to a G.
Yeah.
And I'll go like, Sims, you can't say that. I have to like rehearse that a few times. Yeah. Otherwise, on the show, I'm going to go back to the G. So I don't.
Just the way your brain works.
To go into like a really, so when you ask me those questions, it goes almost like back.
Okay.
It doesn't go to current things, but
a perfect list. I love it. Now, we know the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Oh, I'd like to say thank you for listening. I've only had one cup of coffee today, so I hope that it has been, I've been awake and able to answer your questions. I'm a coffee-aholic. But I would say go and see live entertainment, whether it's a play or your favorite muso. Just really get out and make an evening of it, because there's nothing like it.
So as Louise says, summarizing, experience life, experience entertainment, and go out and do it. This is Celeb Savant, signing out.